Welcome, welcome. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Actually, this is Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, and people keep trying to correct me on that one. With me today is Rebecca Friedman. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Sam.
And it's just the two of us for at least the first part of this show. When this airs, Becky, where are we?
We are in Seattle at the annual Winter Solstice Celebratory Potluck for Freethinkers around the region in Puget Sound. So we're there with Humanists of Washington, Seattle Atheists, the University Unitarian Humanists, and a whole lot of other groups.
And it's, in fact, at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Seattle.
Yes,
the
it is.
University Unitarians, I believe.
Yes.
I don't have the address offhand, but go to the meetup site. You know, join any of the local meetup groups, and there should be an invitation waiting for you.
It's not quite on the solstice, but it's
close enough.
It's celebrating the coming solstice.
Yeah, I'm serious. This title change, I mean, you know, you guys make a really good case, you and Mike, that being, you know, oh, you should have with Sam Mulvey with it. But man, every time I say it, I feel like Steve Martin, when he was one of the first times when he was hosting Saturday Night Live, and he goes in back and goes to the production area, he goes, "It's me, looking at me, looking at me, looking at me." And it feels a little bit like that.
Sam, you've already got a little taste of that by sitting in the car listening to the radio, and it's me listening to me, listening to me.
Well, hey, there's a difference between, you know, being in your head and needing an air check.
Certainly.
All right. Oh, boy. So we have a really great interview coming up, but we should probably do some news first. And we've got some good news, bad news, and then news. So the Mustang School District in Oklahoma announced that it will no longer offer an elective course on the Bible entitled The Book, The Bible's History, Narrative, Impact, and has been challenged by critics for offering the sectarian text as inerrant and historically accurate. In a letter to groups including the ACLU and Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, Superintendent Sean McDaniel declared that the course is no longer under discussion, with no plans to offer it in the future. The elective was scheduled for January 2015, after numerous delays. So I imagine you might have some feelings about this one.
Yes.
as an educator, so why not tell us a little bit about it?
As an educator, this is a great story to hear. This is actually part three of the story, the ongoing saga of this Steve Green Hobby Lobby curriculum that was being, you know, shopped by the Mustang School District.
Right.
And here's the thing. You had this elective course that was newly being unveiled, and it was going to be just elective, but there were people on the school board and in town that thought that this should be a required course. You know, teaching Bible as literature is completely okay. It's completely kosher with the American public education system, as long as you teach it as literature. The thing is,
I would say, though, I mean, yes, theoretically it's okay. Contextless with the rule set that we have, it's okay. But living in the United States of 2014, where there's an active attack by Dominionists to insert the Bible in everyone's education and make them believe it, I at this point, my defense of, no, it's okay to talk about the Bible as literature, I have to admit, that's beginning to be attacked a little bit as because we keep seeing the book, the Bible's history, narrative, and impact, where the first thing it's going to say is, oh, by the way, everything in here is true, and if you don't believe it, you will be tortured for eternity.
You know, Popol Vuh has some interesting things to say about torture. So is the saga of Tiamat and Enkidu and all sorts of other creationists.
Oh, geez, man, it's been a while since we've actually trotted that joke out.
But, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. When you have holistic literature classes that look at creation myths from different cultures, usually one of the accounts in Genesis, because, you know, there's two, one of them is included in that, alongside the Popol Vuh and the saga of Tiamat and Enkidu and, you know, all sorts of things.
But
this was not that. This proposed curriculum was not that. It was supposed to be unveiled September or August of the school year. They said, oh, we're going to postpone it to second semester. It's, you know, just disappeared from the roster. I can't help but think maybe people were a little bit more okay with this thanks to neighboring Texas's adoption of history textbooks that have all sorts of weird Christian biblical references, things like that, including things like Moses being a founding father. So maybe, you know, one way around this is they'll just buy the same textbooks that Texas is hooking onto.
You know, I understand that the creation myths of the Bible are taught along with the Popol Vuh and everything else. But isn't there a point there? Couldn't we just, like, let the whole creation myth thing go for a while?
I mean, are
we getting to the point where maybe we just don't talk about religion at school full stop? Well, at least in elementary school.
I don't think that we're necessarily at that point yet. I think that there are a lot of people whose thinking has been expanded and their questioning has been prompted by realizing that there are many cultures around the world that have creation myths. And if all these other cultures have a myth, maybe the one that's been presented to me since I was 6 years old in daycare is a myth as well.
Right, right. I mean, I get that, but... because it's the wedge argument from the guys up in Seattle all over again. I just feel like I'm beginning to feel like any entry we give them, like, you know, I guess I'm being made a little bit more radical. I feel like any religious entry we give them, we give them an inch, they're going to take roughly 7 parsecs. And
or all of Texas.
Or all of Texas, yeah. Or Michigan, for that matter. And I just feel like maybe it's time, like in elementary school and maybe most of high school, just, you know what? Leave it alone.
Perhaps.
I don't know.
I would be hard-pressed to advocate for that, but I think it would be an interesting conversation.
Fair enough.
I don't know. I think we're going to have to disagree on that one. But to be honest with you, I don't think we'll have any trouble disagreeing with this next one. The Vatican recently appointed a Jesuit with a history of shielding child-abusing priests to the new Office of Promoter of Justice. Robert J. Geisinger was one of the high-ranking Jesuits who shielded the now-defrocked Donald J. McGuire from prosecution after he was accused of a decades-long history of child abuse. Geisinger knew of the accusations against McGuire as early as 1995, but did not notify civil authorities, only suggesting discipline to the Chicago area Jesuit officials 7 years later. McGuire was eventually convicted of molesting 2 boys in 2006. The Vatican Press Office claims that Geisinger has the full support of the Pope and is expected to do an excellent job as promoter of justice.
Promoter of justice.
Promoter of justice.
Promoter of justice.
What do you say at this point? You know what you say at this point? Everybody who says that this new Pope is great, no, this is more of a The Who song. You know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Uh-huh.
He's doing the exact same junk that the last guy did, and to a certain extent that the guy before him did too. All he's doing is talking the talk. He's not walking the walk, and he's got a flock of people around him basically undoing all of the talking the talk while he's doing it before. This was a guy who was, as Mike points out repeatedly, promoted to this office by the same people who brought us the last guy. There's no significant difference here in action, if not in rhetoric.
You know, we have been saying that he's got a pretty good PR team. This Pope now has memes, so that's one point in his favor. Right? You can have a lot of nice...
I don't know that's a point in anybody's favor at this point.
Possibly not. But you can have nice, pithy little statements that are put on a picture, that are easily shared and tweeted out and all kinds of things like this.
Right.
But hey, you know, PR office, you done a little bad with this one. Really? Really? This guy that shielded child molesters is now going to be in charge of disciplining child molesters, and he has the full support of the Pope? You're expecting him to do an excellent job as promoter of justice? It's like putting me in the role of promoter of budgetary fiscal, you know, acuity or something.
You know what, Becky?
What?
I think from their perspective, he'll do a fantastic job.
I guess so.
Because he's not the promoter of justice. He's a PR department.
I guess.
I mean, unless, you know, like I said, this thing before, show me the church handing over evidence, handing over priests.
Before being subpoenaed and threatened to do so.
Before being subpoenaed and basically forced to. Then I'll start believing they're turning over a new leaf. But otherwise, internal investigations that stay internal, that are secrets of the state, is not a new thing. They've been doing that for a very, very, very long time.
But there's a new office. It's called Promoter of Justice.
Yeah.
And here's also the thing.
Do I need to make the Inquisition argument? You know, the Office of the Defense of whatever the heck?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's
like
a cheap one. And that's the problem here, is it's just, this is a thing that takes us into, like I said last time, this is a thing that takes us into dark places within the Catholic Church. Why not go on the... Why not live up to your own morality? Why not show us that, you know, you have that morality. Why not actually do justice?
Why not do justice by all of these children, yeah. Not just the two that, you know, received some justice while McGuire was convicted in 2006. How about all the others that he had been molesting since the 60s?
Yeah,
any priest for that matter.
Everything about this is terrifying, and I worry. I worry about everyone. I worry about the victims, and I worry about, you know, Catholics. How do you? I don't know. You know, it's.
It's a tough one. I don't think that the Pope is doing good by his flock.
So we have another education one. Wow, good thing you're here today.
Good thing I'm here.
Naftali Moster, a former ultra-Orthodox Jew from Brooklyn, is considering suing the state of New York for failing to enforce minimum state educational standards at yeshivas. Moster started the group Young Adults for Fair Education, or YAFED, to encourage the education department to enforce statutes that require accredited schools to provide education substantially equivalent to that provided at public schools. In many yeshivas, boys past age 13 receive minimal instruction in any secular studies like English, math, science, or history. So, first off, for those of us who don't know, what's a yeshiva?
Yeshiva is a religious secondary school, basically. It's a Torah and Talmud training academy, and boys attend it for, you know, full time as their young adulthood schooling. There's some yeshivas that are fine, that have, you know, 4 hours a day of religious studies and 4 hours a day of secular studies, like you would get in a public school. Public school gets about 4 hours of, you know, the core subjects. And then you got your Torah and Talmud and Hebrew on top of that. But the one that Mr. Moster is coming from, and the majority of yeshivas in New York State, you know, past 13, they stop having instruction in English. And the thing is that a lot of these young boys are actually English language learners. Their native language is not English. Interestingly, a lot of the girls fare better in terms of English.
Well, I don't know. Ultra-Orthodox.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
But fare better in terms of self-sufficiency in a more secular world because they have more English exposure often because they're not, you know, put for 8 hours a day studying Talmud and Torah. But, you know, this Mr. Moster, he was a senior in college before he heard the word molecule. He had so many gaps in his knowledge. And we don't see this just with ultra-Orthodox Jews. We see this with fundamentalist homeschool Christians as well,
right,
that have an extremely guarded education that have so many holes in it that really puts you at a disadvantage for functioning in greater society, whether you remain religious or not.
Sure.
So here's the thing that's really interesting about New York is that to be a school, you have to provide substantially equivalent education. You can have supplemental enrichment on top of that, which is what a religious school would have. But there's really very little enforcement of this kind of thing. And so you've got Naftali Moster that's going and trying to advocate for this, to advocate for kids that, you know, just like how he grew up.
Now, I feel like he's on the right side of this. Don't get me wrong, but wouldn't they just have to start declaring that they're homeschooled children and all of that kind of goes away?
Well, they could, except that you could not create charter schools that are specifically Hebrew-based charter schools, which is another issue in New York State that the ultra-Orthodox community has really embedded themselves in.
Yeah.
So that might be one of the reasons to keep this kind of thing.
I'm worried they're going to take a page from Christian Dominionists, where they call it homeschooling, but they've got video classes. There are people who write curriculums. There are people who go to, like, there's a bunch of kids. They're not taught at home. They go to a separate building that has a teacher where they're taught things, and they call it homeschooling.
A homeschool collective, yeah.
Yeah, a homeschool collective, which I believe is called a school.
School.
Yeah. Specifically, Andy Schlafly, mistake of Phyllis Schlafly, is known for doing that, and that's actually how he got a lot of his content for Conservapedia, where he accuses atheism of causing fatness.
Now,
I'm pretty certain my fatness is caused by food.
That's what happens when you crowdsource to 14-year-olds, I guess. I'm not sure exactly what would happen, whether this will result in any kind of enforcement, but it looks like that he may be going the lawsuit route to at least advocate in a place where he had standing.
I wish him well. I just, given the environment today, I just don't know how it's going to turn out. But then again, he's not a part of the majority, so who knows? You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Leo Igwe, a Nigerian human rights advocate and humanist.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn.
And we want to ask you an important question. Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're now going to go into a conversation we had with Leo Igwe back in August, a Nigerian human rights advocate and humanist.
Research fellow of the James Randi Educational Foundation, Leo Igwe, is a Nigerian human rights advocate and humanist. A former Western and Southern African representative of the International Humanist and Ethical Union, Igwe specializes in campaigning against and documenting the impacts of witchcraft accusations and persists with his work despite having been harassed, arrested, and beaten by authorities. He is currently performing research on this topic as a PhD candidate at the Bayreuth International School of African Studies in Germany, and we're honored to welcome him to the program. How are you doing today, Leo?
I'm doing okay.
Great. Could you start off by talking to us for a moment about the problem of witchcraft accusations and where it stems from?
Well, the problem of witchcraft accusation is quite complex because the situation of accusation differs from country to country, community to community, and the narratives are different. So when we are talking about the problem of accusation, let's say in Nigeria, it's slightly different from the situation in Congo, in Tanzania, in Uganda, and other African countries. Unfortunately, whenever people talk about the situation or the phenomenon of accusation in Africa, they tend to conflate the whole phenomenon and they think that, yeah, African witchcraft situation is just a one-dimensional issue. Unfortunately, it is not.
So just how prevalent is the belief in witchcraft? About what percentage of the population within these countries do believe in witches?
Yeah, well, there are some statistics that say that maybe around 60% of Africans believe in witchcraft. But I think that statistic is not accurate. I think there is much more than that. I guess it's over 90% of Africans that believe in witchcraft. Yeah, because witchcraft constitutes part of the traditional notion of life. Because on the continent of Africa, people have this kind of cosmology that has two layers, the natural and the supernatural, the material and the immaterial. So and both layers of cosmology, they come into play in the people's interpretation of reality, people's management of fortune and misfortune. So eventually, witchcraft accusation features when Africans try to interpret or manage issues related to problems they face, misfortune, accidents, death, diseases, or any form of misfortune they suffer.
Do you know if the people being accused of witchcraft, if they're also, or if they believe in it, or are skeptics usually the ones kind of aimed at, and they, you know, they don't really understand why they would be accused of that?
Well, I think the situation of witchcraft accusation in Africa is a bit complex, and I would like to explain it this way. People live in a constant state of suspicion of malevolent magic, suspicion of witchcraft, or what they call witchcraft attack. But the challenge there is applying the level of witchcraft to the accused. So in most cases, people live in situations where they just suspect their neighbors of witchcraft, where they actually insinuate witchcraft attack, but they are not, you know, able to apply the level. They are not able to confront the accused. So there is a power factor when it comes to witchcraft accusation. And that is why the people that are accused, the people that we see out there published as victims of accusation, are often the vulnerable members. They are often people who are in weak social cultural positions, like women, like children, people, or particularly children living with disabilities, children who are orphans, elderly women, women who have no children, women who are widows. These are the people that are who have the level of witchcraft successfully applied to them.
It sounds just devastating to have so much fear go into plaguing people who are the weakest within the culture. Could you give us a sense of the reality that these people face once they face a witchcraft accusation? What becomes of their lives after that?
Well, what becomes of their lives, what they suffer, people who are accused of witchcraft, what they go through, number one, it depends on the community. It depends on sometimes like I said, the socio-political situation. For instance, in many communities across Africa, the wages of witchcraft is death. So people who are accused, people who are successfully, who have the level of witchcraft successfully applied to them, are attacked, tortured, and killed. They are lynched in Malawi, in Tanzania, Uganda, and in many countries across Africa. We don't have what they call safe spaces, also known as witch camps, as we have in Ghana. So in many places across Africa where we don't have safe spaces for accused persons, you know, to flee to, where they could get some protection from attack, they are killed, they are tortured, they are lynched. But in places like Ghana, Burkina Faso, and I think in South Africa, they have some safe spaces where people accused of witchcraft can flee to, where they can take refuge. So in these places, many people who are accused of witchcraft are not killed. See, there are others that are killed. There are others that can't make it because there are others sometimes who have no place to go or who cannot go to some of these safe places, either because they are very far or because they contest their accusation. In other words, they claim they are innocent and they do not know anything about this. The accusation. Sometimes they refuse to go. And when they refuse to go that way, some of them are killed, whether it is in Ghana or Tanzania or Nigeria, they are lynched by a mob. So, but again, there are also situations where people who are accused may have, you know, there are some of their family members who do not support the accusation. Sometimes they take the matter to the court. Sometimes they take the matter maybe to the police or they take the matter to the human rights groups. But these are just few cases. It's only on few occasions because it requires a lot of money to take matters, witchcraft accusation, to court for to prosecute the accusers. So what happens is that many of these people, because they are poor, because they live in rural communities, nobody gets to know what happens to them. Whether they are killed, whether they are tortured, whether they, you know, they are banished from communities, some of them trek kilometers to go to these safe places. And it is still not clear the statistics of people who are victimized, people who die in the course of trying to, you know, get to a safe place or in the course of contesting accusations of witchcraft in their communities.
And so what's your role been in bringing these practices to light? And what would you say are the most important factors in trying to bring this type of behavior to an end?
Well, First of all, what I've been doing, you know, I've been doing so many things. First of all, I've been trying to draw the attention of the world to the scale of the problem. Because many times when I make my presentations, particularly in Europe or in the United States, people will always tell me, oh, I thought witchcraft or witch hunting, you know, ended centuries ago. I didn't know something like this is going on, you know, in Africa or in many parts of in some parts of the world. So the fact here is that the world does not know the scale of the problem, the enormity of the problem. The world just sometimes many people have just little knowledge of what is going on the continent. So what I'm trying to do now is to raise the awareness, is to inform people across the world that we have a silent war going on the continent of Africa. And that war has been going on for several years, and it's taking very, very vicious dimensions because of the diffusion of Christianity, Islam, with traditional beliefs, and it's making the situation more charged. And as people, defenseless people, you know, are constantly being attacked and targeted, and that you need to generate a global action plan, a global strategy to address the problem. So that is one thing I've been trying to do. Another thing I've also been trying to do is that I'm working with some local activists because there are a few critically minded people who are on ground in Nigeria, in Malawi, in Ghana, who are trying to address the problem. So we try to provide them with support. We try to get organizations to partner with them in order to help them do their work. Because they work sometimes under very challenging circumstances. They work in communities where people have this strong belief that witchcraft is real. In other words, you can kill somebody spiritually. And when people die in communities, like recently we have the case of Ebola in Sierra Leone, and we had a situation where people said that they believe in witchcraft is frustrating efforts to address the problem. So it is actually very challenging, you know, addressing this phenomenon, challenging the witchcraft narratives in this community and getting people to abandon, you know, the misconceptions associated with witchcraft. So we try also to do what we call public enlightenment, trying to reason people out, you know, from this erroneous notion in terms of the cause of diseases, misfortune, accidents, or death.
So you're describing what's going on right now in fairly stark terms with, basically a declared war. So you've mentioned that there are people on the ground working on it. What sort of programs do we have from the humanist angle in order to combat this going on right now?
Well, what we can do is to support activists who are engaged in public enlightenment campaigns. Because the witchcraft accusation, I can say, is what I call the problem of the mind. Yes. There's need for the, you know, for mental reorientation. There's need for a kind of a change of mindset. Unless people change their mindset, unless we try to get people to abandon the mindset of dogma, the mindset of blind faith, the mindset of superstition, ignorance, and fear, and of course get them to embrace the values of reason, critical thinking, evidence-based knowledge, we aren't going to, you know, tackle or eradicate witchcraft accusations. So, first of all, is that we need to encourage public enlightenment. We need to support public enlightenment campaigns in the communities. Again, we need to support the victims of witch hunts.
So you've been on the ground working in these camps trying to stop this. Is it safe to work in these camps? Are the workers being accused of witchcraft or facing any other consequences of trying to put a stop to this practice?
Well, it's not very safe. Yes, it's not very safe. But what happens here is that there's need for us to, try to find a way to engage the situation. Because if we say, oh, because it is not very safe, we should allow the situation to continue, then we aren't going to make some progress. I want us to look at the situation in early modern Europe. Yes, it was not very safe to speak out against witch hunting in early modern Europe. But some people did it. Some skeptically minded people did it. Critically oriented people did it. So it requires not just an act of critical mind, it also requires an act of courage. And, you know, we need to go into these communities and make them to understand that bringing an end to witch hunting is in their interest. Yes, there are people who have vested interest in witch hunting. Like there are churches, you know, led by people who claim to have the power to identify witchcraft. There are also churches and traditional witch doctors who rely on, let's say, witchcraft, maybe to generate income, or who think it's the kind of an income generating base for them. It is also important that we creatively, constructively engage the situation and make people to understand that bringing an end to witch hunt is not just in their own interest. It is the interest of their children, and it is the interest of the generations yet unborn.
I know that past year, the Pathfinders Project went through 8 different countries and tried to find the place that they would like for their permanent service project to be, and they actually chose the witch camps in Ghana as where they would like that to be for their humanist service corps that's going to be launching. I actually reached out to them, and they have asked a few questions of you. And you know, it just speaks a lot of how important they see this work that you're doing to have chosen it as the one thing that they're going to be focusing on. The first question, though, that I have is from Wendy Weber. She states that most men are actually allowed to return to their lives after witchcraft accusations. Can you talk to us a moment about gender differences as far as accusations go and whether these men are actually potential allies in changing public opinion?
Yeah, well, fewer men are accused. And fewer men are in the camps. Yeah, actually, we have, call it 7 camps in the north of Ghana, but we just have men in one of the camps. Yeah. Other camps, all women. Now, like I said initially, there is a power factor in witchcraft accusations and in contesting witchcraft. And the Society of Ghana, like many societies, or most societies across Africa, you know, is patriarchal. Men occupy positions of power, positions of domination. Women occupy weaker positions, subordinate positions. So when it comes to the context in contesting accusations, men are often successfully, in other words, they end up going back to their homes. They are the heads of the family. They are the so-called breadwinners for the family. So that sometimes women are kind of, they occupy weak positions, and sometimes people think that they can easily get rid of them. So that this is not just a case of accusation. It's also a way of, if I should say, a kind of shedding, a kind of eliminating, you know, women whom people think are wanted. So that these witch camps are a kind of a dumping ground for, you know, for women who people think they don't want again. So they use the witchcraft frame to get rid of them. So that is why, you know, we have more men, you know, who succeed in contesting the accusations and who do not end up in camps than women.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're having a conversation with Leo Igwe. We're going to go to a break, and when we're going to come back, we're going to continue that conversation.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show on the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
At Puget Sound Celebrant Service, we want to be your secular wedding officiant. We are committed to serving the Puget Sound region and work to ensure your special day is all about you. Robert, a certified humanist celebrant with the Humanist Society, specializes in secular weddings and customizes ceremonies to fit your needs. To commemorate your special day, each couple married by Robert will receive a one-year membership to the American Humanist Association. Find out more at PugetSoundCelebrant.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to AskAnAtheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to PayPal@AskAnAtheist.tv.
Peggy used to say, man, never stop fighting. Don't ever give up.
And as I look out across this crowd right now, I'll tell you, I can see her face in every one of you. I can hear her voice every time you speak.
His name was Matthew Hoffman, the candidate. And though he didn't understand it now, years of inaction, deceit, and fear had formed a cancer, and now it would destroy him. AnnexRadio.com.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic. And now, our conversation with Leo Igwe.
Okay, we have one more question from Wendy. She says, can you envision yourself working with local religious leaders to address the problem? And what would a collaboration like that possibly look like?
Well, I must say that it is a challenge, you know, working with religious leaders. Yes. Particularly if one, you know, has a secular, rationalist, you know, approach. But I want to say that there are some religious leaders who are open to new ideas. I am ready to work with religious leaders who are open to new ideas. Because I know that we cannot wait for or maybe all Africans to become rationalists or atheists before we can continue with our campaign. Most Africans are religious, and many powerful people in the society are religious people. But they are not religious in the same way. There are fanatics. I wouldn't even want to work with religious extremists. Yes. I would like to work with religious moderates, if I should say, people who have very liberal, you know, approach to their religion. And these are people who I think might be open to new ideas. So I think that I will collaborate with, you know, religious leaders who are liberal, who are open-minded, who are ready to welcome people with different ideas, and who are also ready to partner. Now, I want to add here that there are religious leaders who don't want to partner with somebody who has another view, somebody who has another approach. Yes, there are closed-minded religious leaders. I don't think I am ready, personally, to work with such people. I'm rather ready to work with people who are ready to work with me. And for them to be ready to work with me, it means that they are receptive or they are open to new ideas and they are open to collaboration. And these are people who try to put the cause of humanity, the safety of these women, the human dignity of these women, right above their own religious dogma or their own religious belief. So these are the kind of religious leaders I'm ready to work with.
You know, it's funny that you say that. That's exactly what the director of the Pathfinders Project, Connor Robinson, had said at the Foundation Beyond Belief conference in Chicago. He said that one of the things that he was most looking for was a project in which he was wanted and had people who wanted to work with him and wanted him to be there. And he felt that these witch camps were the place where they were the most needed and the most wanted. He actually submitted a question as well, which was, what would you say to somebody who's out there with a desire to join the Humanist Service Corps who plans to come to the aid of these women?
Well, there are many things I can say because there are so many dimensions to the problem. First of all, there's a need, you know, to understand the stories of these women. You cannot, you know, make what I call positive impact in working in the camps, in trying to address this problem without understanding their stories. I think that, first of all, anybody who wants to work in this area should try and understand the stories of the women and use that as an entry point. I also think that there's a need not to look down on them, you know, because of their situation. Because most times, when people get to these camps, they try to have this idea of, you know, hand out humanitarianism. You know, try to, oh, these are unfortunate people. These are people who are hopeless. These are people who are down and out. You know, you try to reach out to them with this kind of mindset. Sometimes it is not helpful and it's counterproductive. It is important that, you know, when we try to interact with them, we try to see them like our sisters, or we try to see them like maybe our mothers or grandmothers or family members. I think that, you know, that kind of warmth, that kind of relationship, that kind of approach, you know, will be effective, you know, and will help us you know, achieve better results in the course of our project.
So, out of curiosity, for those of us who can't join the Humanist Service Corps, what other ways can we reach out and help?
Well, many, like I said, there are many ways. And one way, again, we can help is we need to publicize. When we talk about these camps, I think we need a documentary on these camps.
All right.
Yeah, there are people who might have the skills. It is important we document what is going on there, because publicity helps. Publicity helps to inspire people. A lot of people keep asking these questions because they have little or no information about what goes on there. I think it might be important that we try to document what is going on in these camps. Again, it is also important that people put their skills. You know, people who have medical skills, people who have, who work, let's say, nurses or doctors who might want to help. It's also, we need them because, in fact, one of the women in the camps, I met her, I think that was in December 2012. But when I went back there last year, they told me that she died. What killed her? She was bitten by an insect.
Yikes.
Yeah. Don't mind me laughing. I'm just laughing because of the strange nature of what killed her.
Yeah.
What killed her was just, yeah, just she was bitten by an insect. That was all.
Jeez.
You know, but I think it must be maybe one, you know, that is maybe poisonous or something. So before they could get some help across to her, she just passed away.
Wow.
So it is as bad as that. There are no medical facilities in many of these places. So people who can donate drugs can donate drugs. People who can volunteer to go and provide some health education, do some kind of medical checkup services for these women. I think anything that people can do to support them, you know, anything somebody can do to put their skills, you know, at the disposal of the Humanist Service Corps scheme, I think will be appreciated.
And, you know, this actually ties in a little bit with an article that you wrote recently where you said that the African clergy are re-exporting an Africanized Christianity with an emphasis on demon possession, exorcism, and witch hunting to many European countries as well as the United States. Could you talk to us for just a moment about addressing those issues that perhaps people aren't aware exist within their own countries?
Yes. The Christianity that was brought by European missionaries to many parts of Africa was a kind of what I call a post-Enlightenment Christianity. It was a form of Christianity that looked down on traditional practices of Africans. Yeah, people might call it a colonial Christianity. That's okay. But it was a Christianity that, you know, did not put a lot of emphasis or did not recognize witchcraft beliefs, witchcraft narratives. But when the missionaries, many of them left Africa, African clergy, African clerical persons, they took over the administration of Christianity, the propagation of Christianity. So many of them now have come up with what they call African Christianity or Africanized Christianity, which is Christianity that fuses, Christianity that merges Christian teaching with some traditional beliefs. And it is within this context we can understand, you know, when people today say that the witch hunting campaign in Africa is being championed by pastors and priests, because many of them have taken over from the traditional witch doctors in identifying witchcraft and in exercising witchcraft on people. Now, African pastors are not contented with, you know, with their Africanized Christianity in Africa. They also now want to export their own version of Christianity to other parts of the world. Of course, through the African migrant communities in Europe, America, and Australia. So we have had recently many of these pastors coming to the United States to stage what I call their witchcraft crusade or revival or meetings. Like in 2010, the notorious witch hunter from Nigeria, Helen Obadio, was in the United States, and she has this plan of starting a branch of her church in the U.S. And she wanted to come in 2012, but we mobilized, and she was not issued with a visa. In the UK, she visited, that was in April, and she also tried organizing her witchcraft attack meetings, where she said she could identify and exorcise the witchcraft or the spirit of Mohammed, you know, from people who are possessed. So it is not only Helen Opabio, even another Nigerian pastor was stopped recently from entering the UK by the UK authorities. And the name is Bishop Oyedepo.
Was he the one involved with the witch slapping of children?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Bishop Oyedepo is the owner of the Winner's Chapel.
I'm really glad to hear that you were able to stop him.
Yes. Yes, he was stopped. He was stopped, and it was a major victory, you know, for all of us, all the campaigners. Of course, I did not do it alone, and you know, I did that with the support of British humanists, with the Secular Society, and with so many other child rights campaigners in the UK. So eventually, you know, he was barred from entering the UK.
So, and kind of finally, how can we get involved with this where we can be part of these campaigns to stop this? I would have been part of that had I known. And what is the best way to keep in contact with this movement?
Well, what I could say now is this. We don't have a very formal network. So, yes, we don't have a formal network. It's just informal. Like now, when Helen Opabio wanted to come to the United States in 2012, so what I did was that I just sent out some information to the atheist and freethought groups in the United States, and maybe a few of them replied, and they were able to mobilize, and from there we were able to come up with a kind of an informal network that campaigned against the visit of Helen Opabio, and after that, you know, we just stopped. We didn't continue with it. So we did the same. I did the same thing with the activists in Australia, you know, who protested the visit of another homophobic pastor from Nigeria. So after that, you know, we just left it. So it is just a question of when the need arises. So what I do is that I try to send out information through my Facebook or through the contact or through the network of freethought groups. So what do I say? I think that I'll keep you posted maybe via my Facebook, or if you send me your email, I'm ready to inform you maybe when an African witch hunter is coming to the U.S. So what we just need to do is that we have to be on alert. Yes. You know, because if we are not on alert, they are going to undo the gains of enlightenment, which we so cherish, you know, as a humanist movement.
Leo, thank you very much for being on.
Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Also, I want to state real fast, if you'd like information about the Foundation Beyond Beliefs Humanist Service Corps and the opportunity to assist these beleaguered women, you can visit them on the web at pathfindersproject.com and sign up for their mailing list by clicking Humanist Service Corps, the Humanist Service Corps link at the top of the page.
And that's about all the time we've got this week for Ask an Atheist, but I would like to thank Rick from Elma, Washington, Joao Pedro from Florianopolis, Brazil, John from Fort Wayne, Indiana, and Rich from Kent, actual Kent, in the UK, for meeting Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on. If you would like to help out with Peggy's Challenge, you can go to askanatheist.tv and click on the yellow button to get right to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards keeping the lights on and the show going. And like I said, that's about all the time we've got for today. This is Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Olvey. My co-hosts and writers were Rebecca Witzman, Dave Brulette, and Becky Friedman. My production assistant is Becky Friedman. Music is by Chris Coleman and Steve Siemens. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. Do you still have time to hang out with us at the Solstice Party? See you guys next week.